The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks to Richard Palmer for filling in on yesterday's program. But we're back at it this Thursday morning here in Edmond, Oklahoma, and a lot to get to on today's program. In fact, what sparked the idea for at least most of this show was when I returned home following the broadcast on Tuesday. While I was eating breakfast, I flipped on the morning show, NBC, and they had this interview with a 16-year-old and his family about the Fortnite World Cup that happened, I guess, over last weekend. I thought it was kind of funny that that was going on even as we were finishing up our youth camp. What a contrast when you look at what was happening in New York with all of these young people from all over the world playing a video game tournament. And you contrast that with what was happening, as I say, right here on God's campus. We certainly are living in an entertainment-crazed society. Paul said in 2 Timothy that in these last days, men would be lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. And then you think about all the other prophecies, Isaiah 3 and what Jesus said about the days of Noah, Sodom, and Gomorrah. People are going to be eating, drinking, marrying, all kinds of pleasure-seeking as we drift farther and farther from God. We'll get to that here in just a moment. But first, the Democrats last night, two nights of debates, and on both nights they're there on stage showing off socialism, basically. The Hill says the more debates there are for the Democratic candidates, the clearer it becomes that the best option is another 4 years of President Trump. I think that's an opinion piece at The Hill. But still, the more you see these socialists on display, the stronger the case is made for a second term for Donald Trump. Last night, Cory Booker really hammered away at Joe Biden on his civil rights record, blaming him for what he described as a racist criminal justice system. And so here they are again throwing around that term racist or racism. Everyone, it seems, is being labeled a racist. President Trump addressed this recently in an interview. This is clip 8.
When Congressman Elijah Cummings calls you a racist, your reaction is what?
Well, I think the word has really gone down a long way because everybody's called a racist now. Her own party called Nancy Pelosi a racist 2 weeks ago. The word is so overused. It's such a disgrace. And I can tell you, I'm the least racist person there is in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And they use it almost when they run out of things to criticize you. They say, he's a racist. He's a racist. No.
That's President Trump saying he's the least racist person in the world, but also pointing out an obvious truth there that everyone's getting that label. And, of course, with respect to the president, they didn't get as far as they wanted to with Russian collusion. And so now it's the racism charge. That's what they're going to try to bring him down with. I thought the Federalists had a good point in an article this week, too, where it says if Donald Trump attacked Somalian warlords on Twitter, the Atlantic would run a 10,000-word piece explaining why decentralized Somali rule is actually good for minorities. They'd take the opposite, in other words, of anything the president tweets. A couple more stories here. This one here from page 6 on tree-hugging celebrities taking their jets to this extravagant Google camp. Hundreds of private jets descending upon this famous Italian resort. to discuss. What do you think they're there to discuss? This is from the article. It says the billionaire creators of Google have invited a who's who list of A-names, including former President Barack Obama, Prince Harry, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Katy Perry, to the Sicilian seaside for a mega party that they've dubbed the Google Camp. And the number one topic on the list is how to combat climate change. They're coming in on all these private jets from all over the world. Prince Harry, former President Barack Obama. Prince Harry, by the way, there was an interview this week where he told the interviewer that he and his wife, Meghan Markle, they're only going to have two children because they want to save the earth. They don't want to have more than two children. The Daily Mail says, despite their commitment to saving the planet, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are known for their globe-trotting lifestyle and use of private jets. But they're only going to have two children in order to save the planet. This article talks about Markle, who went to New York for, well, this was all on board a private jet for, I think it was a baby shower. Anyway, back to this page six piece. It says the three-day event will focus on fighting climate change, though it's unknown how much time the attendees will spend discussing their own effect on the environment, such as the scores of private jets they arrive in and the mega yachts many of them are staying in. It says, but according to an Italian press report, the attendees were expected to show up in 114 private jets, and 40 had arrived by Sunday. It says the Post crunched the numbers and found that 114 flights from Los Angeles to Palmero, Italy, where camp guests landed, would spew an estimated 100,000 kilograms of CO2 into the air. That's from page six. All of these hypocrites coming together to tell the rest of the world how they need to reduce carbon emissions. There's another piece here from Issues and Insights about global warming. The title being, will the global warming hysterics never tire of being wrong? Will they never tire of getting it wrong? This article says Prince Charles' recent pronouncement that we have only 18 months to save the planet from man-made global warmings was followed up by a BBC report telling an identical tale. So the media, they're right on board with it. And this is nothing new. This is every 2-3 years, there's a new deadline that they set. That if we don't do something by such and such date, it's over. That's it. They're prophesying, really. All of these false prophecies. It says, now it seems there's a growing consensus that the next 18 months will be critical in dealing with the global heating crisis, among other environmental challenges. That's according to a BBC correspondent. It says observers recognize that the decisive political steps to enable the cuts in carbon to take place will have to happen before the end of next year. And so the year 2020, that's a firm deadline now. Here's another deadline. I think we already passed the deadline that Al Gore set 10, 15 years ago for the explosion of the earth or whatever it was. But here we are now, converging upon 2020. It says we've had firm deadlines before. Nothing happened. But we're supposed to believe this one is really firm, that it can't be ignored. Forget all those previous predictions of doom, they tell us, because this time they have it right. And maybe the window is not even 18 months. Those grand ruminators at Think Progress are sure we have only 14 months. Could be 14 months, not 18. And so that's a few of the headlines from Richard's stack sent over from our UK office. But this story that I noticed on Tuesday, the interview with this family, nice-looking young 16-year-old. He was on the NBC morning show with his mom and his dad. And they were there to celebrate his victory in the Fortnite World Cup. And we've talked before about this video game, wildly popular, released in July of 2017. So just 2 years. And it's Battle Royale. It's become the most popular video game ever. It has more than 250 million registered players. And last year it made an estimated $2.4 billion. It's making so much money because, well, you have to put money into it to get more tools or weapons or whatever it is that you need to advance in the game. And so there's lots of parents that are complaining because their children are demanding more money so that they can get farther into the game. In Battle Royale, you've got 100 competitors. And I guess it's all done online. They're dropped into this shrinking island, and they have to battle each other. It's, I guess, similar to a Hunger Games type theme. You have to battle each other until you're the last man standing, and you do it by gaining weapons, tools, and so on, and then building your protective fortress as you go. But the game, besides being wildly popular, it's made a lot of headlines over the past 2 years for being addictive. These young people can't break away from it. They're playing it for hours and hours and hours a day. Some have compared it to heroin, this addiction. Netflix wrote a letter to its shareholders earlier this year saying that Fortnite is taking more and more of its revenue away, more so than other movie competitors, because so many young people are turning to this now, spending so much time on this instead of on Netflix. Well, so now we have the Fortnite World Cup, an international competition hosted this year in New York City, to find out who was the best, who would be the best gamer over this 3-day event. And as I say, NBC interviewed this teenager together with his parents on Tuesday morning. Here's a bit from that interview, clip one.
We're back now with today's talker, the story that vindicates any teenager who's been told they spend too much time playing video games.
Yes, Kyle Booga Giersdorf, a 16-year-old from Pennsylvania, won the first ever Fortnite World Cup on Sunday. And get this, he netted $3 million in the process.
$3 million for this 16-year-old, the first ever Fortnite World Cup. And so we have another yearly event that's going to draw in millions and millions of viewers, participants, dollars, and of course gamers from all over the world. NBC, in this giving this background on Tuesday, it went on to say this, clip two.
It's a look at his historic win.
Bow down to Booga!
The victory was a first of its kind.
Champion Booga!
16-year-old Kyle Giersdorf took home the title and a whopping $3 million grand prize at the first ever Fortnite World Cup. Millions competed to get in, but only 100 were chosen to play. At the end of the nearly four-hour gaming competition, Giersdorf, who goes by the name Booga, secured the top spot.
Words can't even explain it right now. I'm just so happy. Everything I've done, the grind, it's all paid off, and it's just insane.
The tournament packed New York's Arthur Ashe Stadium with nearly 10,000 fans.
This is a zone.
With more than 1 million more watching the intense competition online. Sunday's victory means even more for the fairly new but wildly successful esports industry. Revenues for professional video game competitions is expected to hit $1.1 billion in 2019. That's 27% more than last year.
And so you see the direction, the trend. Here, it's new. but wildly successful. It's called the esports industry. Esports. It's professional video gaming now. You can be 16 and play video games for 8 hours a day and maybe become a professional and maybe make millions of dollars. That's the message, of course. The fine point, or the smaller print, is that 40 million people tried to qualify for this. 40 million young people. And who knows how many more that are playing and playing and playing that didn't even try to get into the competition. The Guardian says the players manned their stations on a state-of-the-art two-story playing stage with screens depicting each player's view in the game. Wall-to-wall color commentary. This is like Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl. It was broadcast on Fortnite.com, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Mixer, and Caffeine. Some of the platforms allowed viewers to focus on their preferred player. The telecast featured all the hallmarks of a major sporting event: breathless announcers, splashy graphics, soft focus profiles of the competitors that wouldn't feel out of place in NBC's Olympics coverage. That's where it's headed. It probably will be in the Olympics at some point. Esports. Stuart Saw, the head of esports at the sports and entertainment company Endeavor, who headed the event logistics, said the number of feeds going into the production truck was twice that of the Super Bowl. Twice that of the Super Bowl. With several dozen in-arena and in-game cameras, in addition to the individual displays for each of the 100 players. It says the biggest names on the Fortnite circuit are global celebrities, teenage millionaires, with social media followings rivaling the world's most famous athletes. You may not have heard of 21-year-old Turner Tofu Tenney, but your niece probably has. It's a generational disconnect that even the biggest stars reflect on. And so here comes another wild phenomenon. Teenagers devoting their lives to these kinds of games, and the winner coming out, and it's incredible. My wife made the point when we were watching it Tuesday morning. She said, isn't it amazing that it looks like your all-American family, nice-looking kid, he's not overweight or anything like that, and his mom and his dad are there, so they're still married, they're all together, and he's spending 6-8 hours a day playing a video game, and this is normal. In fact, it's lucrative. Here's a bit more from that report Tuesday morning, clip 3.
How did this happen? What did you have to do to win and become world champion and get $3 million?
It's taken a lot of time, like hard practice over the past 2 years. I've just dedicated like all of my time into improving and getting better pretty much.
He's dedicated all of his time to improving and getting better. As I said earlier, 40 million players over a 10-week period were involved in this, trying to qualify for this event at Arthur Ashe Stadium. And imagine 10,000 fans showing up in that stadium to watch 100 video gamers. And then it's broadcast live on the internet. Millions, millions more watching the event from all over the world. Watching! I remember when, I think it was Sam or somebody, sent me a YouTube clip of some guy playing a video game. You're watching YouTube. You're watching a guy play a video game. So there's playing the video game yourself, and then there's watching the other player play it. And hundreds of thousands of views on this YouTube video, this YouTube channel, and there's tons of them. Like that article brings out, you may not have heard of this 21-year-old sensation, but your niece, your nephew, they've probably heard of him. Here's another bit from NBC, clip four.
Mom and Dad, I mean, in your wildest imagination, did you ever think your son's love of video games would lead to something like this?
Oh.
I mean, we knew he had it in him, but the whole experience was so surreal. And I just still, I had to ask my sister, like, am I dreaming? Is this really real? We were so in shock.
They were in shock, but they knew he had it in him to accomplish this, as I said. You see them on NBC, and it looks like the All-American family. What you don't see are all these other families that have been split apart and all these other young people that are addicted, that are sick, in some cases that have died because of their extreme addiction to playing games, seeking pleasure. This winner went on to explain what it was that he went through to be that good at this video game. This is clip five.
So how often do you play? How many hours a day do you play video games?
I'd say like 6 hours a day of practicing.
So how do you do your schoolwork and all the other stuff?
Fit it in with like free periods during like school and also like after like an hour or two.
So Glenn, we've sort of been joking all morning, and I'm sure a lot of parents are thinking the same thing. I go and I tell my kids, stop playing Fortnite. What am I supposed to say now? He won $3 million playing Fortnite. Did you guys ever have those moments where he was in playing 6 hours a day?
Absolutely. We still have them. You know, it's all in moderation.
It's all in moderation. His son plays 6 hours a day, tries to squeeze in his homework and free periods. And this is what passes for moderation today. You can see the devil's influence. All of these video games just in the past 10, 15 years. And then because we have a few years behind us now, then there's the studies that follow that say, wait a second, this is really bad. Look at how it's affecting our young people. Look at how it's affecting our children. I mentioned that story a few months back. This kid who had his Xbox or whatever locked into the car, his mom's car, and he went and bashed in the window. He's that addicted. He has to keep playing. You see stories like that all the time. But here comes the devil now telling parents, well, hang on a second. Maybe it's not such a bad thing. Maybe if you can get a popular YouTube channel and make a few hundred thousand dollars, maybe it's all worth it. And so here are millions of children, millions of teenagers chasing their dream by sitting in a chair for 6-8 hours a day playing games. But it's all in moderation, says one parent. This article here from CNN, it says, in second place, 24-year-old Harrison Salm Chang, a former professional Heroes and Storm player, he won $1.8 million. Talks about all of the prize money, how it was broken down. And this Chang, he's 24, and he's considered to be old. He was one of the oldest players at the competition. The average age of competitors at this event, 16 years old. A 16-year-old winning the event. Brad McDonald sent me a video clip yesterday, because following this competition in New York, there was a second-place finisher. I guess he was in the duo competition, whatever that is. And he returned to the UK with about £1 million in his pocket. So right away, he goes on Good Morning Britain. And Mr. McDonald sent that video across as well. Here's an exchange from Good Morning Britain, clip six.
I play for like 8 hours a day sometimes.
Even on a school day?
Sometimes, if I really want to play. But then sometimes I just chill or just go on YouTube or something.
So if you're not playing Fortnite, you're watching YouTube?
Yeah, but sometimes like I try to kill a lot of like the dead hours out. So like sometimes like watching YouTube on Netflix. Like,
it's dead hours time when you're not on Fortnite.
Yeah.
Is that how you see it?
Yeah, so like...
when he's not on Fortnite, those are the dead hours that he tries to kill with Netflix or YouTube. And his mom's there sitting alongside of him on Good Morning Britain. She's beaming. She's beaming because now they've got a new house in the works. He's going to buy the family a new home, a bigger home, so that he has a room that's devoted to his video game consoles. And don't you know the message? It's coming through loud and clear to all the others around the world, hundreds of millions of them, that you can become a professional if you work hard enough. Now, again, it's all in moderation. You can somehow fit it in. Even during a school day, you can still get in the 8 hours. It's possible, and you can be a millionaire, and it can make your family happy. 8 hours a day. And then, during the dead hours, Netflix and YouTube to go with it. Is that healthy? Is that moderation? Does that build the family? Does that build character? Well, in listening to the mother of this 15-year-old, some would say, yes, it actually does build character. Here's one final clip, clip 7.
So look, you took all the actions that normal parents would take. You got rid of the Xbox at one point to get him to stop playing. You even snapped the headset.
Definitely.
He didn't listen. Are you now delighted?
Do you know what? Since going to New York, I've learned so much about the game. And it's not even just about the game itself. It's all of the skills that Jaden uses to play it. Skills that people you see in everyday life haven't got. My son is equipped with so many skills that I didn't even realise that he was using in that game. You know, and it's not even that. The guys, young boys and the people that are in his organisation, they are such lovely kids and they all just spurring each other on to do well.
So it's quite a creative environment.
Lots of creativity, lots of skills, lots of friendships to be made. And, of course, they don't go through all of the negative statistics, all of the tragic stories. This from, it's another piece here, each of the 100 competitors. Well, it talks about how it's broken down, how much money is in it, in this kind of thing, more than even some popular sports now. And as I say, the other side of this is the money Fortnite's bringing in because of families who are out there all over the world paying for the upgrades. This from Consumer Affairs on tech addiction. It says, tech gaming is monstrous in scope and a virtual Niagara of revenue. Global consumer spending on mobile gaming apps is set to reach $105 billion by 2021. A stat so impressive that everyone wants in on the party. See, they all want to participate. They want to fill Arthur Ashe Stadium. They want to watch it online. They want to get a popular YouTube channel. It's all about social media. It's all about making a quick buck. It says the party, according to Steam Spy, including 276 million active gamers who each own an average of 49 of the 205,000 games available, produced by companies whose entire existence is dedicated to mining the motivations of gamers and administering the digital dopamine drip that they crave. They've got to make it addictive. They've got to keep them coming back. And moderation, the definition of it, it continues to increase. The hours put toward the game. 6 hours, that's fine, as long as you finish your homework. It says the addiction side of gaming is also monstrous in scope. Listen to this. The addiction side is monstrous. In fact, it's so monstrous that the World Health Organization officially recognizes gaming disorder as a mental health condition. WHO conservatively estimates that 3-4% of gamers, totaling tens of millions of people, struggle with gaming disorder. It says while the physical offshoot of over-gaming can be minimal, say a headache or sleep deprivation. Some gamers have wound up hospitalized or dead. Those are the stories that you won't really read much about amid all the hoopla over the so-called Fortnite World Cup. And this was the first one. I would imagine they're probably going to be having it every year from now on. And who knows how many other gaming tournaments. This is just one video game, Fortnite. They're designing them to be addictive. And it's so addictive now that there's actually the Alcoholics Anonymous version of video game addiction. Notice Luke chapter 2. As I say, when you contrast this with some of the lessons we were trying to get across at PYC the past few weeks, what a contrast. As I was saying the other day, you look into the Bible, you see some of these remarkable youths. Josiah becoming king of Judah when he was just 8 years old. The prophet Samuel triggering this righteous reformation when he was just 13. The prophet Jeremiah taking on a difficult, challenging, even scary commission when he was just 17. David killing a giant when he was in his teen years. These were remarkable lads, remarkable young people. And of course, Jesus Christ, the best example of all, a 12-year-old, off with his parents, Joseph and Mary, to observe the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Luke 2 and verse 40 says, and the child grew, that's Jesus, speaking of Jesus, the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. This was a strong, robust child, a 12-year-old, known for wisdom well beyond his years. A young lad that God really blessed. It says in verse 41, now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. So here they are, traveling along with this caravan, I guess. It says, and when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, in the caravan, they went a full day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. They were a day into it. This tells you something about the young Jesus, who he loved people. He loved to mingle. He loved to move in and around the caravan to talk to everyone. And it was a full day before his parents realized, well, hang on a second, he's not even with us. He had stayed in Jerusalem. It says in, I read that. Verse 45 says, and when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. He was just talking to the doctors, the attorneys, the lawyers, the grown men, the adults, interacting with scholarly men, with learned men, asking questions, seeking knowledge, wisdom. It says in verse 47, and all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said to him, son, why have you thus dealt with us? Behold, your father and I have sought you sorrowing. They were amazed and somewhat hurt by this, but Jesus said, verse 48, how is it that you sought me? Wist you not that I must be about my father's business? and they understood not the saying which he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus, it says, verse 52, he increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. This was a young man who had a close relationship with his Father in heaven. He was very familiar with his Father's business, and he was close to his parents. He became the most mature teenager ever to walk this earth. He had perfect physical health, and he was a man of wisdom, a young man of wisdom and stature, a balanced individual. This is the Bible definition of balance and moderation. But Satan has another definition, as you can see from this nonsense. These stories that are really, truthfully, hard to believe, that there's this kind of money, time, effort, and energy being devoted to activities or entertainment where there's no value, there's no character. What a waste. I thought this was interesting. This is a Stephen Ambrose book about Meriwether Lewis of Lewis and Clark fame, these two explorers that traveled west. You know some of the backstory here. I want to put together a longer segment on this in the future. But Thomas Jefferson buying the Louisiana Purchase, the biggest land bargain in history. And then as soon as that purchase is made in 1803, he commissions Meriwether Lewis to head west and to write about his journey, to explore, to go all the way to the Pacific coast. This is how the United States stretched from sea to shining sea. But this was an unusual young man, Meriwether Lewis. He lost his father when he was just a young boy, and then his stepfather died, I think when he was 17 or 18. And this book talks about how that at 18 years of age, he was on his own. He had traveled extensively across the southern part of the U.S. He had shown himself to be self-reliant, self-contained, self-confident, a self-confident teenager, and he was a young man who took great pride in his perseverance and steadiness of purpose. His health was excellent. His physical powers were outstanding. He was sensitive and caring about his mother and family. He was started. He was on his way. And at 18, as a teenager, he was responsible for his family because his father and his stepfather had died. He was the head of the home, this teenager. This is just in America's earliest history. I could give you all kinds of examples from the Bible. I gave you just one a minute ago. But look at the way it used to be in the United States. A man of adventure, a learned man, a talented man, a healthy man, an active man. And yet it's interesting the way these individuals drove themselves, the way they thought. Lewis, Meriwether Lewis, he wrote on his 31st birthday. So he's still a relatively young man. He's 31 years of age. And he felt like, you know, I'm not doing enough. I'm not accomplishing enough. Listen to this from his journal. He says, "This day I completed my 31st year. I reflected that I had as yet done but little, very little indeed, to further the happiness of the human race, or to advance the information of the succeeding generation. I haven't done enough to contribute to society, to advance the human race." He said, "I viewed with regret the many hours I have spent in indolence, and how sorely feel the want of that information which those hours would have given me had I been had they been judiciously expended. He was lamenting the fact that he had wasted away hours as a young man. He resolved, in future, to live for mankind as I have heretofore lived for myself. At 31, he said, you know what, from now on, it's living for mankind. I'm not in this for myself. I want to do this for my nation. I want to do great things for God's work, if you apply this to the instruction we were giving our young people at camp. Thinking beyond ourselves. Now that's some mature thinking for a young man. That's something that we need to instill within our young people. Train them up in the way that they should go. In our booklet, Child Rearing with Vision, it says, too many parents are so self-absorbed and caught up in their own personal crises that they can't focus on the proper rearing of children. To save our children, parents must take on their God-given responsibility to nurture, love, lead, teach, and discipline their children. Make your family time interactive. This means controlling your media use, putting restrictions on it, reducing it, even going so far as to say no video games. There's so much else we need to do as a family. It says, even time spent together looking at a screen is usually squandered. It rarely builds up the family. As Mr. Armstrong wrote, before the advent of the internet, streaming services, personal computers, tablets, and smartphones, he said, the movies bring pleasures through the sense of sight and sound. Kids spend hours a day before the one-eyed monster. It provides a ready-made daydream, and misuse not only dulls the mind, television has been a prime medium by which the anti-family conspiracy has injected its deadly poison into juvenile and adult minds. It's poisonous, so much of it. And it dulls the mind. And it's exactly as is prophesied. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. We love pleasure more than God. Our booklet, it says, so many children today would rather sit inside and watch movies or play video games than go outside and run around, go fishing, climb trees. Urbanization has turned yesterday's open woods into housing developments and strip malls. So the real world has shrunk for most young people. At the same time, thanks to television, movies, video games, and the internet, the virtual world has dramatically expanded for young people. A noisy, hyper world that requires no imagination and no activity. This is all by design. Satan's behind this. He wants our young people living in fantasy land. He wants the minds of our young people to be immersed into a fake world. This booklet says we must be determined to provide our children with regular stimulating challenges, hunt down opportunities to keep them active, to engage their imaginations, to work their hands, to show them what they can do if they only make the effort. Set an example in how to engage vigorously in real-world activity, to do whatever their hand finds to do with their might. Our children should be taught to be doers. Doers, not viewers. So many of the young people today, they just sit and watch things. And now you've got people sitting and watching other people watch things. That's how bad it is. We need activity. We need active events. God's word says, as I keep saying at these campaigns we're going on, God's word says to be doers. And God's word also talks about the many distractions that we're just filling our minds with, dulling our minds, ready-made daydream, Satan just pouring his thoughts, his ideas, his aims, his goals, his ambitions into the minds of our young people. We've got to be on guard against it. We've got to resist against it. We've got to draw near to God. You can't draw near to God through a video game or a movie. You draw near to God by switching off those devices and studying God's word and filling up on the things of God. Philippians 4, 8, Colossians 3, 1 and 2. Set your mind on the things above. As ministers in God's church, as parents in God's church, we're going up against a lot. And it's going to take some determined diligence on our part to really make sure that our children, our young people, our teenagers are being fed properly. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some sounds from PYC, as I say, when you contrast what was happening over the last few weeks here in Edmond, Oklahoma, with what was happening out in the world. It's a wonderful blessing to see these programs that God has raised up for our young people today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can submit comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is there a more urgent expression in the Bible than the last hour? When he wrote his epistles, the Apostle John thought it was the last hour before Christ's second coming. In fact, it was only a type of our time today. Every detail of what John prophesied is now being fulfilled. Request the last hour. Never before has proper time management been more important, and this book will give you the urgency you need to organize your life God's way. Request The Last Hour. As part of this free offer, request The 7 Laws of Success by Herbert W. Armstrong, one of his most popular books ever. If you want to be a successful life organizer, then you need to read The 7 Laws of Success by Herbert W. Armstrong. Again, both books are completely free. So contact us now and get the help you need to organize your life God's way. The Trumpet Daily.
We don't have hundreds of thousands of viewers on our YouTube channel like some of these video gamer channels, but more and more of our viewers are, or our listeners, I should say, they are going over or switching over to the YouTube stream because they can see some of the video that accompanies the audio bits that we play on this program. And this next short segment would be good to view on. You'll still find the sounds interesting if you're listening to the audio feed only. But this is these are some highlights from the flag football activity that we had at PYC this past year. It was an activity just for the boys, and they did exceptionally well. I think I watched three or four of the games myself. I even played in one of the games between 4B and 2B. Had some fun with that. It went all the way down to the wire. The last play of the game. So that was exciting. And then the highlights that you're about to see here are from the flag football all-star game from last Thursday night, which also went right down to the wire. It was, I guess the final score made it seem like it wasn't as good of a game as it actually was, but there was just an 8-point difference between the two teams before an interception that led to a final touchdown that stretched out the score just a little bit for the team that won. But we'll conclude today's program with some sights and sounds from the flag football competition last week.
And McCoy completed. Hand off.
Go up, go up.
Stall. Big hand off. Roll to the right. Complete. Mitchell. Oh. As opposed to the extra two, this would be a kick by Scott Herma, which is good. That makes it 7-0. Pitch back to Jude Flurry.
Go.
He's got a first down and more.
Go.
Oh, another flag pull again at the 2 yard line.
Run.
Yeah! Oh, the goal line stand. Team Harden misses on a golden opportunity. What a catch.